Hello, I'm Justine Sullivan, a yoga student, a yoga enthusiast, and a qualified yoga teacher, although we'll talk more about what that means later on. I want this first yoga podcast of mine to be a general introduction into yoga. What is yoga? Is it something your doctor tells you to do when you have a bad back? Is it something you think you should do as you get older and stiffer? Is it something people tell you to do if you're a bit stressed? Or is it something completely different? And are there lots of different ways to practice yoga? And is any of that physical and what most people think of when you say yoga? What exactly is yoga? My hope and intention with today's podcast is to shine a bit of light on yoga and hopefully keeping things nice and simple, try and explain what yoga is. I'm joined today by three lovely people I've met over the years whilst practicing yoga. I would like to welcome them to this podcast and ask them to introduce themselves.
Hi, Justine. It's nice to be here. As you know, my name is Savira. I'm a yoga teacher, but I've taken time off from teaching. So right now I'm more of a student than a practitioner or a teacher of yoga. And I'm based in Brussels.
And Ori?
Hi, guys. My name is Ori. I have been a student of yoga for about 40 years now. I was 8 years old when I started with my grandmother. I'm also a teacher. I teach sometimes, but I think I'm very selfish because I want to learn even more and more and more. And the more I get into yoga, I find I still continue to be a student rather than a teacher. Professionally, I'm a solicitor. I practice law. And yoga is the yin to my yang.
Oh. We're also having you on board means if we get into any hot water legally, we've got a good lawyer on hand. Tanya, brief introduction as well, please.
Hello, I'm a yoga teacher. I started practicing in the 90s. Became a yoga teacher about 10 years ago. And now the pandemic has made me a full-time carer and I'm a yoga teacher on Zoom. So the lockdown has really helped me out because I'm at home looking after mom and teaching on Zoom and pretty scared to come out into the world and teach in person again. So turning down work right, left and center. So yeah, but being a yoga teacher is what I am. What I love, I've been various things before. I've worked in government and I've worked in media. And this is the right place for me. Being a yoga teacher.
So the big, big question, what is yoga? Can you describe what yoga is? Savira, we'll go to you.
That's a big one. I'm going to try and keep this very simple. So the actual meaning of yoga, which is to yoke, to unite. When we talk about to yoke, to unite, what we're talking about is understanding our true nature, is how do we resonate or work towards that connection of the inner or the higher consciousness. So to me, that is what yoga is all about. And it can vary from person to person, their understanding, depending on where they are in their own practice and journey and education of yoga.
Okay. I mean, for some people, we look upon it as an exercise class. Is it just an exercise class? Is it a stretching class or something more relaxing? Ori, what is yoga? Can you describe what yoga is?
Yeah, I was just reflecting on the answer that Savira provided, and I tend to agree with her. I explain it slightly differently to my students. And here's what I try and explain. All of us have three things. We have our body, we have our mind, and we have our spirit. Now, because of backlash towards organized religion, the word spirit has become almost a bad word. But does it exist? Well, you know, I explain it in the following way. If I was to cover your nose and mouth for 4 minutes or 5 minutes, your body will remain. Your mind will stop working because, you know, your body has stopped working. and your spirit will leave the body. And this spirit in yoga is called prana, life force. The Chinese call it qi. Star Wars describes it as force. May the force be with you. But in yoga, we call it prana. So for me, yoga is the science or art, whichever way you look at it, of understanding prana and growing your prana. And in Hatha yoga, which is the physical form of yoga, we use our body for movement, coordinate it with breath, keeping the focus, what we call drishti, on a fixed object. And through that process, we enhance or increase the prana in the practitioner. And that, to me, is a rather oversimplified explanation to yoga.
I really like that. Tanya, how would you describe yoga? If someone said to you, well, what is yoga? Because I remember watching a TV show once, and the host, I won't say who the host was, and he said, he had someone sat in the chair, and he said, I've got so-and-so in the chair, the contestant, and she's a yoga teacher. What is yoga? And she said, this is yoga. This is yoga. And he said, what, sitting in a chair? She went, yeah. And I thought, well, that's a wasted opportunity, because he just took the mickey out of her. But Tanya, someone says to you, well, what is yoga? Come on, I want to do some yoga. What is it?
Well, I agree with the other two, and I can see what this contestant was saying, but that doesn't help. That doesn't help anybody. And how do you get into class? Do you talk about how do you get somebody who's reluctant into class? Do you talk about Drithi? I think you asked us in an email, what would you say to an alien? Look down on Earth and they see earthlings. I have no understanding what this body is, but this body is a kind of elongated thing. There's a head on top, there's a torso, there's limbs. And the alien designer would say, well, there are obvious problems with this design. So for example, the middle bit, there's muscles that are supposed to hold the spine up and hold the torso up. And clearly most people in the world are not looking after that muscle. And there's other muscles that are supposed to facilitate movement, and they seize up and they stiffen up, and they're not facilitating movement, they're preventing movement. What's this all about? And then the alien cousin would look at over the world and would see yoga classes and say, okay, people in those classes seem to be doing better. They seem to be moving better, working better. The lungs are working better. So to get our alien cousins into class, assuming they have the same body as us, it moves better, it works better, the breathing is better. And Ori is right, you know, spirituality has become a little bit of a dirty word. And I used to say, no, I'm not a spiritual person. I'm not. It will creep up on you in yoga. It will creep up on you. But before you get to that, manage this body. You're the manager. You've got staff, your lungs, your heart, your circulation. You have to look after them. You have to pay them well. And you are the manager. Yoga helps you do that.
About the mind stuff, Severa.
It's, what do I say? It's intricate, it's multi-layered. There's a lot, we're controlled a lot by the mind. It is what guides us, directs us. And so we need to find that balance between the heart and the mind, or even how does the mind guide us or direct our actions, our day-to-day living? Because a lot of what emerges from there is the thoughts. Thoughts become energy, or the thoughts become emotions. Emotions then again guide us again into our desires, non-desires. So eventually the practice of yoga is to stir and to understand the mechanics of your mind. How does it work? And how can we find some sort of clarity, some sort of calmness, openness, so that when we do act, or when we do offer our actions into the world or within the community, it is done from that space of clarity, as opposed to confusion, agitation, or from attachments and certain belief systems.
Yeah, I mean, certainly for me, the mind stuff came as a result of the physical practice. And the physical practice makes me want to live a more balanced life. It makes me want to eat better food. It wants, you know, I don't want to have a hangover if I'm going to be practicing yoga. You know, it makes me want to have a different lifestyle. I'm really good with restraining things in my life and disciplines as well. I enjoy the discipline element of it. And through the physical practice, I've been able to still the mental flutterings of the brain, which instead of living your life in amber and running to red constantly, I feel like I can settle in green for a bit and just not rush the anger too much. So that's my thing on the mental stuff, the mind stuff with yoga. It comes to me as a result of the physical practice. Ori and Tanya, your thoughts about the mind stuff.
Yeah, of yoga. I'm trying to take a stab at it. And, you know, I really liked what Sabira had to say. And on reflecting upon that, I thought the best way for me to contribute to this is by explaining my own journey. And through that journey, which lasted about 40 years of practice, what did I understand of the mind? I started yoga at the age of 8 when my grandmother would contort me into postures. I hated it. It was in Calcutta. India was very poor. And everything Oriental felt poverty driven. So by the time I got to about 16, our yoga shala, that is the place where you practice yoga, had bodybuilders and yogis. Yogis did bodybuilding, bodybuilders did yoga. And they were, it's called Jog and Bam in Bengali. Yoga and Bam. Bam is musculation. And the musculation side of it obviously interested me a lot more. Around about that time, Arnold Schwarzenegger had come out with his seminal book, Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding. All my texts of yoga were discarded. That book sat on my shelf and I got busy building, you know, pecs and triceps, what most boys at the age of 16, 17 do. Got into law school, very strenuous law school, got thrown into the world of commerciality, and it was run. And I was taught to run. I was bred. The system in India was only about commercial success. That is, just keep running and accumulate more, because the last generations lived in poverty and you need to undo that. So in all that running, I ended up here in the United Kingdom about 21 years ago, kept on running. And guess what happened? I ended up with brain diseases. And that's when I started inquiring into the mind to think about how can yoga fix the mind. The mind primarily resides in our brain and in the central nervous system. So, you know, how do you fix that? To cut a very long story short, the day I realized that I comprise of my body, my mind, and the spirit, and the three need to be in harmony. If I'm out of sync with one, somehow that manifests itself in illness in me. It's often like a pressure valve. The weakest part of it breaks, and that's where it comes out. For me, it was the brain. For some others, it's the stomach. And that is an accumulation of stress. So yeah, yoga, through the meditative practice, helps fix the mind. And as you get more advanced into it, you tend to focus more on the mind and the spirit. The body is merely an instrumentality to get you there.
Ori, you've just touched on something. When I first started practicing yoga, I went through a very stressful week. I think I was going through a job change. I think I was going through a flatmate change. I think my sister was getting married. There was a lot of stuff all happening at the same time. And I just started practicing yoga. And normally I would be panicky, quite anxious about these things that were big, big life-changing moments. And I decided that week, back in the year 2000, to just practice yoga. I didn't even know which one it was. Just practice yoga every single night of the week. I went to this club in the West End of London, and I practice yoga every single day. And I had this kind of like enlightenment moment where I was like, you know what? I've coped incredibly well with the things that life has thrown at me this week. And I think for then it was that was the moment for me where I realized the power of yoga can affect the brain. And I slept well, because I used to have panic attacks and I used to have terrible problems sleeping. And it enabled me. So I'm with you on that, on the fact that, you know, by doing the physical practice, I was able to cope mentally with things. And that's where the mind stuff for me really works. Tanya, what about the mind stuff for you?
Yeah, I relate to Ori's story. I wasn't interested in mind stuff at all. I was interested in the physicality. So I used to be a cyclist. I used to cycle to Paris. I was a spinning class instructor. But all my friends were going to yoga, so I had no choice. And I was a gym bunny. So I'd meet my friends in yoga class, and I wanted to stretch my legs. You know, I wanted to stretch out the bits that were aching after cycling. So, yeah, and I would insist, I'm not spiritual. That's not me. I don't do that. And it creeps up on you. And the definition of yoga, what is it? Stilling the fluctuations of the mind. It's not shoulder stand. It's not headstand. It's not get your foot behind your head. Those are not the definitions of yoga. And you get on the mat and you do exactly what the teacher says. You breathe, you inhale for this and you exhale for that. And you inhale for this and you exhale for that. And lo and behold, you are stilling the fluctuations of the mind. And so like your week where you've got the wedding and you've got this and you've got the moving and you've got, you know, and you don't need to go to class and be told you're here for the mind stuff. That's not what you're told in class, but it is. But it is, and you can cope. And yoga is a physical practice because we access the mind and the spirit. We access it through the body. We live in the body. So it's got to be a physical practice. But it will, whether you want to go there or not towards the spirituality, it will come anyway.
there was a yoga teacher the other week. She said, through repetition, the magic will arise. Through repetition, the magic will arise. And you get that when you practice, have the physical practice, you get that. Obviously, you get muscle memory, but also through repetition, through continually doing it, the magic of yoga arises. Is it, I'm going to just throw little curveballs in here because, you know, essentially, when you see yoga in a gymnasium as yoga classes, all of what we just sort of talked about would not be the description of what they'd be trying to get you in to do. So do they need to call it something else? I don't know. There is the business side of yoga. So as teachers or people who teach yoga to other people, the physical yoga, we'd quite like our classes to have people in there. So we don't want to put people off. But is it possible to do a bit of yoga? Can you just do a bit of yoga? Or is that just, as you were saying, Tanya, stretching out the knotty bits? You know, because I hear a lot of people going, oh, yeah, we did a bit of yoga the other day, end of our step class. Is that possible? Can you just do a bit of yoga, or is that simply just stretching?
You know, I'll try. Sorry. I was so tempted by what was just said right now. You know, you started this chain of thought by asking, should we call these classes yoga in a gym? And my view is absolutely yes. Let them come and dip their toes in it. Yoga is a little bit like an onion. You know, it's when you enter the class, what you see is the outer layer and you get drawn into it. For a bloke, I can tell you why blokes get drawn into it. Never in your life do you get the opportunity to be in such a target-rich environment with beautiful women contorted in these postures. So yeah, let them get drawn in. Into the superficiality of it. But yoga is such that it will suck them in more and more. And I'll tell you why. When you do yoga, your prana increases. It just does. And that feeling that a human being experiences with enhanced prana is pretty addictive. So my view would be, let them come in, dip their toes with a little bit of yoga. And if it is for them, I have a feeling it's going to become a gourmet fest in the years to come.
Tanya, Severa, any thoughts on people being able to do a little bit of yoga? Is it possible to do a little bit of yoga? Severa will ask you.
Why not? So here's the thing. When we all stepped on the mat, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, I stepped onto the mat for purely physical reasons, right? So we all approach the practice from different angles because it varies. It comes in different stages. So someone younger to me will approach it from a very different perspective. And I probably will approach it at this age from a more spiritual aspect. So yes, so we can come towards yoga in many ways. And as Ori says, the prana will guide you, but it also depends on the teacher. Depending on the focus of the teacher, your practice will also move into that direction. And as we say, we just did a bit of yoga. I think yoga nowadays is the buzzword. It is the in thing. And to be seen, to be heard, to be part of what is going on in the outside world, yoga has become that. It all depends on who's teaching you, what stage of life you're in, what brings you to the practice, because it's a subjective practice. But the essence of the main aspect of yoga, that hasn't changed. So I don't know, what does Tanya think?
Yeah, Tanya, what do you think?
Well, I think if you ask, is it okay to do a bit of yoga? As opposed to what? Are you talking about a 90-minute practice? Are you talking about, you know, it really depends where you're...
I think what I'm talking about is someone who's done like a step class who might then do a couple of yoga postures to stretch out the class. Is that, and then they say, oh yeah, that was yoga. And it's like, is that yoga, or was that just a posture, which is a yogic posture?
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't think we need to judge. I don't think we need to judge. So, you know, somehow after a step class, they did a forward fold, they did a triangle pose and stretched out the side of the body. They did something else which gave them a twist. They found that they had to breathe. Maybe they were given an instruction, inhale, exhale. We don't need to judge, and we don't need to say, I'm better than you because I do 90 minutes and you did two postures at the end of a class. I'm better than you. We don't need to go there at all.
I would say that, you know, at the end of a step class, if a person is doing a forward fold or a downward dog or an upward dog, you know, to stretch the front and the back, is that yoga or is that mere calisthenics? The key distinguishing factor would be their breath. Are they coordinating the physical movement with breath? If they are, there's a much greater likelihood of that action being more of a yogic posture as opposed to a calisthenic hold, like, for example, a plank or something like that. The breathing aspect, and if along with that you can combine a third thing, which is fixing your gaze on a fixed spot, you know, that is the cherry on top of the cake.
Yeah.
Can I add to this?
Yes, please. Yeah.
So if you see how the yoga is in the West, it was purely based. And I think I'm slowly seeing the change that it's moving away from that pure physical practice to a more wider understanding of yoga. So I think when someone says, oh, I did a bit of yoga at the end of the step class, would be more of asana, the pose. And the understanding has been for many years that yoga is just asana. So I think that the understanding of yoga needs to change. Yeah. So when someone says, I did a few postures at the end, or yoga postures at the end of the class, I think that that's fine. But to call it yoga, personally, I think yoga has a broader meaning, depth behind it. So I think it comes back to our understanding and changing that train of thought of what yoga was to what it really is.
Can you practice yoga and not have a physical practice? So is there a difference between asana and yoga? So I'm just going to quickly explain yoga and asana. So we hear this word a lot in yoga, and asana is a body posture, originally a sitting pose for meditation, and later in Hatha yoga and modern yoga as exercise, adding reclining, standing, inverted, twisting, balancing poses to the meditation seats. The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali define asana as a position that is steady and comfortable. We'll come on to the Yoga Sutras briefly later and Patanjali, who is Patanjali a little bit later on. And also the term hatha or hatha yoga is a catch-all term for any type of yoga that pairs poses, asanas, with breathing techniques, pranayama. Can you practice yoga and not have a physical practice? Severa, because I think I heard you talk about this. Am I right in that your father had a yoga practice but never got on the mat? And yeah, I'd let you explain.
So my father practiced the yamas and the niyamas. And for him, it was establishing yourself in these first two limbs of yoga. He's never been on a mat. He's never practiced the physical asanas on the mat. But he's established himself through the Bhagavad Gita and through the first two limbs and pranayama. And I have seen someone sort of move through his journey in life based on these, just by using a few of these tools. So yes, it's possible. I've seen, in fact, many people, just not my father. And also the essence of practicing yoga, the way I would describe it is when I was recently in India to be with my parents, that steadiness, that unwavering mind, which allowed me to move or guide my actions, is yoga. So I am not affected by the emotions. I'm not affected by what is happening on the outside. Although what was happening at that time was quite severe and quite detrimental. In India, it was in April during the second wave of COVID. So yes, you are able to move into that practice of yoga. You are able to access the practice without doing the asanas, but the asanas will come because you will realize the tightness in your body. So you probably will do what my father did was towards the end, he would be lying on his bed and he'd spend an hour moving his limbs, moving his legs, keeping them moist, movable. And then towards the end, he would end up doing his pranayama. And that was his practice for many, many years, right until the very end. And the practice towards the very end, to me, is what's the missing element is that when we talk about yoga, we talk only about what we're doing now, when actually yoga is learning from the time you're born till the time you die. That is the whole process of yoga. And so my journey has changed in my own practice after seeing what my parents had gone through. So understanding death and understanding the reasons why, the ifs and the buts behind it is more or less my practice right now. So yes, it is absolutely possible to practice yoga without coming onto your mat.
You did touch on a couple of words there, which was you mentioned the two limbs, the first two limbs of yoga, the yamas and the niyamas. We'll talk about that briefly towards the end. Ori, Tanya, do you agree with Severa? I mean, do you have anything to add on that? Or is it, no, you can't. You can only do yoga if you've got a headstand, you've done a shoulder stand and you're sweating and you've got abs.
I think I need to travel to Brussels and do some yoga with Severa. The state she has described, and that is being able to buffet against these thoughts and emotions. You know, I'm still a very long way from being able to do that. So once again, let me try and clarify the confusion that exists in the mind of people about yoga through my own confusion. As a child, my grandmother, she would force me to contort myself into all sorts of postures. And she herself would only sit on a plank of wood with beads and she would go into a trance. And she didn't do any. And I was furious because that was so unfair. that was so easy, and asking me to get into all these postures and make me sweat was so unfair. As a child, I didn't understand that sitting on the plank of wood for hours in a state of bliss is far, 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 far more difficult. And then I came to the West, where I went to gyms, where, you know, this is sort of 1999, 2000, yoga's just catching on in the West. It's gathering a lot of momentum. Tri Yoga had opened that year in London. All the gyms had yoga classes. And I went to those yoga classes and I enjoyed it. But this confusion kept coming up. What yoga are you doing? Are you doing Hatha Yoga? Are you doing Ashtanga Yoga? Well, as as Severa said, limbs, there are 8 of them. And I know we'll touch on them later. And Hatha Yoga, that is a physical yoga, is only one of those limbs. And in that limb, Hatha Yoga, you are using physical movement coordinated with your breath to increase your prana. The 7 other limbs also help you increase your prana, the different ways of doing it. But going back to what Tanya said, we are physical beings. We are physical. Even if you sit on a plank of wood, or even if you're focusing attention on, it is still physical. But as Severa said earlier, it's a union. How do you achieve union between these three, your body, your mind, and your spirit?
I tell you, one of the enlightening things for me was the yin practice, just people not being able to stay still. And Shavasana, which is the end pose in most yoga practice, which, I mean, I hate the word, it means corpse, I don't like it, but the resting pose. And I often turn up to class and say, I'm just going to do Shavasana for like 90 minutes. Is that okay? But that's the hardest pose, to lay still, to not fidget, to still the mind. You know,
and not snore.
And not snore. I don't snore, Ori.
That's my problem. I end up snoring.
It's not sleepy pose. It's rest.
Exactly.
So it's a really hard pose. I want to ask how strict a yoga practice should be. Ori, you've talked about your grandmother, a fascinating lady.
She had a stick.
She had a stick.
And she used it liberally on me.
Well, you have a very strong practice, so she did very well.
That's not what I was thinking then. But yeah, I mean, both Severa and Tanya are from a similar heritage. And in the Orient, the Oriental way of thinking is based around duty. And the Occidental way of thinking is based around right. Now, this is something that you study in Jurisprudence 101 when you're in law school, where in the Orient, you are made, like, for example, very often when people be speaking in India colloquially, they're saying, you know, where are you going? They would say, sir, I'm going for duty. I'm going for my duty. I'm going to office. That's what it has colloquially become. So why am I saying all of this? I'm saying all of this because the initial conception of yoga, which happened 5,000 years ago in the Indus Valley, happened in a geographic part of the world where the culture was thus strictness based around duty. Now that it has spread its tentacles around the globe and in the very few parts of the earth where people are not practicing yoga these days, their classes in Mongolia, their classes all over the world. What happens of this strictness in those parts of the world where first the culture is different, people are a lot more liberal, and it's not a duty-based model, but a right-based model. This is my right. Well, I think yoga will need to adapt. If it doesn't, it will die. It will need to adapt because I think prana can be created in lots of ways. The strictness helps with some practitioners, for example, there are many days when I don't feel like practicing, but the moment I have taken my mat, unfurled it, and I start saying my prayer in Ashtanga, Vande Guru Nam, from there it just flows. It just flows. So the strictness has its place for a practitioner, but it is not the only ingredient for generating greater prana.
What does it say about me as a person? I enjoy the strictness of a yoga class and the discipline of a yoga class. And I am drawn to the yoga styles that insist on strictness in a way. 7 billion people on the planet, there will be 7 billion different downward facing dogs. We won't all look the same in yoga. I don't buy into the belief that the more you practice, the more you will get there eventually. No, you won't. I've been practicing for over 20 years and there's stuff I physically can't do and probably will never be able to do. And if I had followed strict guidelines on certain practices, I wouldn't have got past the first three postures for 18 years. But I do enjoy the strictness of a class and I do enjoy the discipline because I feel that I want to respect the lineage, the tradition. I want to respect where it came from. So you won't find me glugging water in a yoga class. I'm quite strict with people who come to my yoga class. I say, I'm not going to stop you drinking water. It's your right to drink water, but I will encourage you to not drink water during the class. It's okay to be uncomfortable. Pain is not great. Back away from pain, but allow your body to be slightly uncomfortable. Don't panic the second you get a little bit warm. I personally quite like to get a little bit uncomfortable and to push myself. I had a very emotional day yesterday and a very, very sad day. And I was doing a yoga class and I was tearful. I was crying at the beginning of the class because we were kind of contemplating and thinking for the first, you know, sitting there and just contemplating life and our practice. And I had tears rolling down my face and I thought, you can't do this practice today, Justine, you can't do it. And then I went, no, you can. You're going to use your, you're going to be disciplined and you're going to do it. And I had the most incredibly strong Jivamukti practice yesterday that I've had in a very long time. And it was about discipline. It was about stopping the fluctuations of the mind. It was about the attachment I had to the sadness that was coming in. It was my attachment to it. It was the forward attachment, the past attachment. And it was all the stories that I was making up around the sadness. Whereas it was very sad. Yes, it is sad. I like my yoga to be yoga. I like it to be strict. And I like it to be...
You're hardcore.
I'm hardcore. I'm not.
Justin, you're hardcore.
No.
Honestly.
Are you saying that in a mean way, Ori?
No, I mean that in the nicest possible way.
I don't judge and I am
No.
I'm very open about everything, but for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because Justin, I am a rebel. The reason I became a lawyer is because of that. So my desire to want to rebel in a yoga class where teachers being strict has a lot to do with things that happened 40 years ago. And I had to spend a lot of money with doctors to get to the bottom of that. So, but that rigidity, that strictness, what it does for you is it switches on autopilot. The moment you feel you don't want to do and you just get started, that discipline takes your body through a time when your body doesn't want to be in those postures. But what your body needs are those postures with that breathing, especially for someone who has suffered anxiety. You know, when you suffer anxiety, you don't want to do yoga when you're in the midst of a panic attack. What do you need? Yoga in the midst of a panic attack. So that strictness helps in those moments when you just don't want to go there.
Tanya, Severa, any thoughts on the strictness?
You know, discipline is important. And let's face it, it's a practice where you're focusing body, mind, and your spirit, or your inner light or essence, whatever the word you want to use, your higher self, and trying to bring union between these three is no easy task. So if there is no discipline, then there is no union, there is no understanding, there is no moving deeper into your practice. So I think discipline is important. If you think of it, look, every day we wake up, we go to work. Why? Why do we have to go to work? Well, we've got to earn, we've got to do this, we've got to contribute to society. So we're doing the same thing with ourselves. If we don't have that discipline, then we're not doing ourselves any favor. And there is no growth. There is no understanding. So yeah, for me, I like a class that's disciplined, and I like to stay with the culture as much. And I think what's missing, again, comes the understanding of Indian culture. So we've taken a practice and we've torn it from its culture, or torn it from its heart. So now you have something here that looks like yoga, and that's what we're going to practice, without understanding the entirety of what yoga is, where it has come from, why is it practiced this way, why is discipline is important, why are certain aspects of the yamas and the niyamas, or the eight limbs of yoga, important. And that boils down to first understanding who we are, or what are the purusharthas, and what are the ashrams, which we will discuss later on, which are the four stages that a human being goes through. So my approach is going to vary to that of Tanya's and to Ori's and to yours, depending on the stage that I'm in my life. So maybe certain discipline is necessary initially to get me started, and that could change later on into something else.
I agree absolutely with what Zavira just said. In general, discipline, we need discipline. Of course, you need a structure. How are we going to elevate our prana? How are we going to work with this energy? How are we, if you don't have any structure towards it? Absolutely, we need discipline. Strict is not a word that I relate to, and I think it's been ruined by the Ashtanga community. There's been a very odd kind of teaching that says you only do it this way. You only get new postures when I tell you. You don't do this, you do that. And I've been to a strict, most of the Ashtanga teachers that come from old, the David Swensons, the David Williams, their classes are a delight to be in. And they follow the pattern, they follow the sequence. You come away feeling wonderful. I've been to a strict teacher's class. It was the most ridiculous. It was almost comic how she was telling us off for having our toes in the wrong place and this in the wrong place and shoulder, everything. Like, who taught you to do a posture like that? It's all wrong. You're all doing it wrong. It was the most ridiculous class I've ever been in, and it didn't work.
Zavira,
we've become a society, and that could be with what we see in media and consumerism. We've become a society of instant gratification. We want something, we want it now, because we feel we are right to do it. And we don't take too kindly to being told that the practice of yoga is very different. And as we say, it's discipline, it's observation, it's noticing, it's pausing in that moment and really seeing things for what they are. And we're not used to that. We don't like it. We don't like being told. And I think that comes just, and that is all over. And that's human nature as well, to want something and want it now.
So Tanya, what was your first impression of yoga, would you say?
Well, that would have been in Oxford Street in 1995. It was in Hone's Place. And the teacher would have been Lorraine McConnon, still a yoga teacher. She's a senior Iyengar teacher, and we're still friends. And I have to say, no disrespect to her or any other teacher I went to at the time, but I don't remember anything about what it felt like to be in a yoga class, apart from these spectacular lunges, and they were called warrior, lunging this way, lunging that way. Someone said, your lunges are spectacular. That's all I remember. Until I did my first Ashtanga class in 1999, and I came out of Shavasana, the final pose where you're lying down, corpse pose. I came out, we sat up, we put our hands together, and it felt different. I remember that class. That's the first class I remember. And I'd been doing yoga for 4 or 5 years by then.
Severa, what was your first impression of yoga?
Well, I was used as, a friend of mine was opening up a yoga studio, and so she needed to practice her teaching, so I became her guinea pig. There was a time in my 40s, I could not do chair and nor could I squat. That's how bad I was physically. And then I think she says that we'll just do it till I open up the studio, then I don't need to teach you. And I started noticing the change in my knees. I started noticing from a physical aspect. And I didn't notice the internal change because till someone said something to me, oh, Severa, I notice you're not as agitated or not as, there was a word she used, I can't remember. She says, you're not so quick to jump to conclusions or quick to jump to a decision. And that's when I noticed the change. So ever since then, I've been practicing yoga. But my best part, and I still love it, is the Shavasana. I look forward to the Shavasana. Forget the beginning. Get me to Shavasana and I'm happy. I'm a happy person. So yeah, that's my first impression of yoga.
I mean, like you, I mean, physically, I mean, I don't think I couldn't sit on the floor, put my legs out straight without having to bend my back and put my hands. I could not sit up straight on the floor. I could only bend as far as my knees. And yes, I was physically very, very, very stiff. Chronic back pain. I've had chronic back pain all my life. And I've had a lot of injuries in my body just from over tightness, but also hypermobility and hypomobility. I've got the combination of both. So yeah, my first impression of yoga was obviously, you know, hearing people doing it and then going along again, Tanya, to Holmes Place, but I was in the one in Regent's Place. They had an awful lot of yoga there. They had like 5 or 6 classes a day. And I thought, I really want to do yoga. So I just went to all the classes and I remember someone saying to me, what kind of yoga are you doing? And I was like, I'm doing yoga. What are you asking me? I'm doing yoga. I've no idea. And then I realized, oh, right, that's what they're talking about. And like you, Tanya, I settled on Ashtanga, which in brackets back then was called power yoga, which is the yoga that Madonna was talking an awful lot about in the 90s. And we all know what Madonna used to look like. It's just like this fantastic muscular being. So I was like, well, that looks good. And then also I used to do an Iyengar class, which is, I always find it more workshop-based class based on strict alignment. And then a kind of quite traditional kind of hatha yoga class, which didn't involve much movement. But yeah, I settled on that. But yeah, and I think it was coming out of the power yoga, the Ashtanga yoga class, that I suddenly had that clarity. I just was like, whoa, this is good stuff. You know, I feel I'm on top of the world and I can actually, I can take anything on. Ori, we've talked.
Had me think.
What?
I wonder if it is Madonna or Patabi Joyce we should credit for the way yoga spread.
Well, I know who I heard it from first.
I've never done Ashtanga.
Haven't you? There's always a chance, Vera. Monday night, we'll do a live Zoom. people listening thinking, what the hell is Ashtanga? Well, moving on very quickly. We've talked about different styles of yoga. It's like dance. Dance is the umbrella. There's jazz, there's ballet, there's hip hop, there's street dance. It's all dance. There's disco dancing. There's the tango, which is strict. There is ballet dancing, which is getting strict. Then you've got freestyle. So there are lots of different styles of yoga. And I will say to anybody wanting to practice yoga, try all of them. Try all the styles. It's about the style and it's about the teachers. Two things you've got to get right.
And I would add a word of caution here.
Go on, then.
In going and trying all these styles, and not every style on offer in the gyms, not try yoga, in the gyms actually tantamounts to yoga. There is a lot being missold. Nothing wrong with it, because then people, obviously, after having consumed spurious products, will want to know what the real stuff is. Yeah, so no harm in that. But in, you know, for your listeners, as you go out and try yoga classes, keep one thing in mind: the physical movement needs to be linked to your breath. I have been to lots of classes with beautiful music, amazing looking people, postures which just had me filled with jealousy. But it was not yoga. It was a calisthenic class with lots of ex-ballet dancers and things like that. And there were a lot of yoga postures, which was a part of the calisthenic. There was no focus on the breathing. That is not yoga.
No, I agree. We can jump ahead, because you've touched on something there, Ori. East versus West. So yoga, obviously designed by men, now it's predominantly practiced, or so it seems, in most yoga studios and gymnasiums by women. Because you get, I've been in a class where a guy will go, well, it's not really for men. And you think, well, it was designed for men. Because there's definitely some postures where the female anatomy wasn't considered. And there's another thing that I always say whenever I've got chalk out to put on my hands and someone says, oh, well, Patabi Joy wouldn't do that. And I say, well, Patabi Joy didn't go through the menopause, did he? But we were having some curry in the house for the week, and my son said, I said, well, you've got this. And he said, oh, well, what have you got? And I said, I've got that. And he said, oh, I thought it was just curry. And I thought, well, that's precisely what yoga is, isn't it? It's like, it is, you've got your vindaloos, you've got your stronger dishes, you've got your more authentic dishes. And then you've got the ones where, you know, to make it a bit more palatable, the dishes that have been adapted to introduce people to curry. So like your chicken kormas and your chicken tikka masala, which I believe is a westernized, it was invented in the UK, chicken tikka masala, I believe. So what do you think of more kind of westernized versions of yoga, which don't tap into the breath so much or concentrate on the breath?
I'll tell you why I love it. Growing up in India, 70s and 80s, India was a closed country, so you couldn't import things in. It's only 1991 that they liberalized and imports could come in. So up until then, if you wanted to wear a Nike shoe, you would have to do with a fake Nike shoe. Yeah. So I spent a lot of my childhood wearing fake Nike shoes in a good year, which obviously had me wonder, what is a real Nike like? Now, I see the same happening with yoga. Yeah, go in there, you know, try out some of these other dishes which are being passed off as curry. But you will wonder what the real curry is like, and all the different curries. And that's exactly what has happened with yoga. Just as you had Vindaloo come from Goa, you have Ashtanga that comes from Mysore. Iyengar then moved to Pune and set up, Iyengar, who himself is a South Indian man from Mysore, went to Pune and made Iyengar popular in Pune. Now, in the late 1890s you know, 1910, there was a yoga movement which was very popular and powerful in India at that point of time, which was in Calcutta. But that sort of got crushed, because the British Empire was very dominant in the Calcutta region, not in South India. In South India, the kings, the Maharajas of Mysore, actually extended a lot of grants so that Ashtanga could become popular. So there are different curries, there are different styles of yoga. You don't know what you will like till you have tasted some of it. And when you consume curry, which is not really curry, there are chances you will try and consume real curry one day.
Nicely put. Severe. Tanya, I haven't heard from you for a little bit. What are your thoughts?
Sorry, does that mean that in order to taste real yoga, you have to go to India to practice it?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'm sorry, that's a very good question you asked me, because I may have ended up creating that kind of an impression. Absolutely not. Some of the best yoga classes I have been to were all outside India. Singapore, California, New York, Chicago, DC, all across Europe, Spain. I mean, there are some fantastic yoga teachers out there. So no, it's anyone who says yoga is only in India. So long as they are human beings with a soul who are willing to grow it, it'll happen in some form or the other. It may be called yoga, it may not. But it's the growth of prana.
Did that answer your question, Tanya?
Yeah, and I also think so. But I've heard people say that you can only do real yoga in India. What was the question that we're...
I mean, are you worried about yoga, the practice, yoga becoming a little bit too westernized? And people adapting it to make it more palatable, more acceptable, more, you know, teachers not wanting to do the chant in class in case someone gets offended, or someone says, oh, I don't mind a bit of yoga, or don't look all the OMS. And it's like, well, okay, but isn't that part of the practice? Isn't that like going to church and saying, church is saying, I don't like the hymns. Can we not sing? And it's, you know, do you know what I mean? And I just think, well,
and madam, I think you prefer a different curry then.
but this
curry has some garam masala in it.
Yeah, like all curry should. But do you know what I mean? It's like, are we too worried about, why can't we just be caught? This is what yoga is. And if you come to the class, you are going to get some chanting, some OMS. You're going to get, somebody might burn some incense or have some smells going on and say stuff which will make you feel like, you know, a bit spiritual. Is that, you know, and then you've got other teachers who just like, they don't want to touch on that weird stuff and they just want to keep it as an exercise class. So, and I've been to some yoga classes where it is purely an aerobics class. Get on your mat and they're just getting the stretch on. Should it matter what they're being taught? But so that's my point. Is it, I mean, should they be called exercise class? Or should they be, or is it okay to call it a yoga class when it barely resembles yoga?
I think there's a real problem if we are trying to define and say this is yoga and that isn't. So as I said earlier, my yoga is better than yours because I do 90 minutes or I do first and second series. In fact, I spend the whole morning doing yoga. In fact, I've given up my job because there's no time because I've got to start with my pranayama and I've got to do my kriyas and then I do my primary series and second series and then I have to have a lie down. So clearly, I'm better than you who goes to a stretch class, a step class, and you do a couple of postures afterwards. I think we really have to move away from naming it, categorizing it, compartmentalizing it.
Tanya, sorry to interrupt you. I totally agree with what you're saying there about, you know, someone getting up and doing 10 minutes of yoga is no more less or more relevant than someone doing 20 minutes of yoga, half an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours a day. What I'm trying to say is when a class is called, this is a yoga class, And it's becoming quite westernized, as in there's no breath with linking breath with movement.
But what are you calling a yoga class? Does there have to be a statue? Does there have to be a Ganesh? Does there have to be incense? Is there, I mean, these are things I don't teach with at all. Mm-hmm. I think you can keep it simple. I like to keep it simple. And there are other teachers that will burn the incense, and the people who are going to yoga class will find their teacher and they'll settle into that groove. And I don't think we need to worry about what's happening in the West.
Severa, your thoughts on the question? Did you want me to repeat it or are you okay?
No, I'm okay. So the way I see it, the principle of yoga, that somewhat is missing within the West, right? So again, it is that instant gratification. And here's the next thing. What is... Asana and pranayama is something that you can control, you can see, not see per se, but you can feel your asanas. You can also adapt, you can change, you can see what is going on. That is sellable, that is saleable, that is consumerism. You can reinvent it, you can change it, you can change the name, you can change the title to suit and to get more people into your doors. What cannot be sold is the spiritual aspect. So how do you sell something that you can't really see, that's not concrete? So more and more what's happening in the West is that separation between the two. And if you come into a class, to me, it doesn't matter whether you have a Ganesh or you don't have a Ganesh, whether you have incense or no incense, that doesn't make the yoga class. That doesn't make your yoga. That is all aesthetics. It is the content that matters, the principle of the yoga that matters, the reason why you're on the mat. And that can vary for many people. Yes, you'll use your breath if you are anxious, if you have breathing issues. You'll use your body if you're tight, whatever they are. Then eventually you move into meditative, you move more into the subtle layers of the mind. It is, but it will happen. So then comes again that principle. And then as you move deeper into your practice, you'll notice that there's less of the physical, but more of the breath, more of the subtle mind. So to me, I definitely feel that it is the core subject is missing a lot. And the reason of doing or reciting these mantras or saying Om is that you move from the concrete to the more subtle. And each of these, whether you're reciting Om or whether you're reciting a mantra or you're doing the japa, which is the bead and the counting, these all affect the subtle mental body. And so, yeah, it is necessary to do it. Otherwise, you just get stuck. How do you move beyond that?
So do you worry then, Severa, that it is becoming, we're losing that element then of what yoga is?
Yes, we're still, because if there was this movement about in the yoga industry about changing it, moving it, but we haven't really moved per se. We're still stuck there, right? Because West or the East now, we rely a lot on consumption, consumerism. We have our understanding or our need to get is a lot more, is a lot stronger. And we get bored very quickly. So why do you think we have so many varieties and styles of yoga? Because we've done something for two or three times and we go, okay, I'm done, over it. Now I need something else.
Yeah,
we're in that state of constantly trying to renew the practice, renew yoga, to keep drawing people in, because the most simplest form will be the most difficult practice. As we've all agreed, sitting still is not easy. And nobody wants to do that, because why? You've asked me to come into a studio just to sit.
You know, maybe it is true. Maybe the lady sitting in the TV, on the TV show, on that chair, and her not panicking as it was live TV, maybe that was yoga. Maybe her ability to sit there confidently without panicking, maybe that was yoga. Maybe that was the answer. What is yoga? Well, what I'm doing right now, stilling the fluttering of my mind and keeping my heartbeat regular and not panicking and being able to think straight, maybe that is yoga. Maybe she was right. I don't know. I really want to come back and talk about the yoga philosophy, the sutras and the eight limbs of yoga, if anything, to get my head around it, because I still can't get my head around it. Sometimes you can look at texts and it's just hard to comprehend. And when you listen to people talk about things and they explain it in a way that you hadn't read it, I just think you learn a lot more personally. Anything else you want to add? Severa, anything else you want to say?
Yoga is going to go through changes. That's because, you know, we're human, we're creative, we're going to do things slightly different. But even if we do things different, I think it's important that we don't lose the core fundamental understanding of the practice. And we don't forget or don't, and rather than just jumping into yoga is to really understand the culture behind it, to understand the people behind it. Then you'll have a better understanding as to why certain things in the practice, or even when you come to the sutras, why are they the way they are? And I think that's important. So that background is missing a lot, and it's nice to sort of go into it and learn. Just like when we learn a new language, we need to know the background. We need to know where the language comes from. Why is it spoken a certain way? And I think yoga is very much similar like that.
Tanya, did you want to say anything?
I want to say to people, come to class. Just
come to class. Do you want to leave your website addresses at the end of this podcast?
Yes, please.
Go for it, Tanya.
It's goodtimesyoga.co.uk. So I called it Good Times Yoga because I want people to have a good time.
My website, you'll find some podcasts on what we've discussed and on the yamas and niyamas. It's saviragupta.com.
Lovely. Okay. And mine is justanga.com, which is justanga.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you
to Ori as well. He's gone. And it's been a real pleasure. And I would like to invite us four back again to chat about the Yoga Sutras and the philosophy, if anything, to learn more myself.